So thank you for your time. A little bit of a change. We've been talking mostly about fruit and things, and now it's all about the roots and what they do. Let's see. I'll just use this. I just want to introduce the breeding team that we have here in Geneva. Of course, Jim Cummings, who was the originator of the breeding project 40 years ago, and then Herb Bellwinkle, Terrence Robinson is presenting work about our broodstocks right next door, so I'm missing that. And then a few people, technicians, without which all of this is impossible. And if you take my project and put it into this Wordle program, you get a lot of you get a gist of what the breeding project is about. Breeding rootstocks, but there is disease. We have replant, productivity, nursery work, and so on and so forth. So we're a big project. It's not easy to breed rootstocks because we measure almost everything on the scion. Many years ago, this is what apple trees looked like. This is what they look like now. And the apples are very well spaced and very free. It's a very precise endeavor now. And all of that was made possible by perhaps two genes that have this effect of making the apple trees more productive and their performance. We just published on those two genes and their relationship recently. If you this is relevant to this presentation because of somewhat of their effects on nutrients. But in terms of productivity, we can now model and in fact model the and predict what kind of productivity a tree will have and what level of dwarfing within a certain confidence interval. Just by using markers that are connected to these to this trait, and so that's done or pretty much done, and now we're looking at other traits that are relevant for root systems, and that is their interaction with the soil environment and their ability to uptake nutrients and transport them to the scion. So we devised several experiments that looked at perhaps the pH connection with rootstocks and then getting material to the scion. We looked at apple replant disease, and we continue to look at that, and then the understanding the genetics. And we published this material so you can go back as a reference. In a pot study, we found many QTLs, significant QTLs, that conferred different levels of nutrients in the scion. So several of these have actually been, so this was perhaps the best situation in which to grow rootstocks, a population of rootstocks, pot studies and watered and fertilized. But then we've conferred many of these QTLs in field studies that we're doing. Just a reminder, this is what roots do and rootstocks do essentially. They have little tiny pores and porous molecules or proteins on their surface. The nutrients kind of get absorbed, and there are different models for that. And then, of course, they go up and into that. Some get pulled by the evapotranspiration. Some are actively transported. So each of these nutrients that we monitor in the scion perhaps has a very different model and that it follows. or a pathway that it follows in. And you can see that in the case of absorbance, so the actual coming into the root system, that you can have co-absorption, root exudates, things changing the root structure, the root number of roots turning over, the exploration index. All of these can have an effect, as well as the conductance. So once they're in, if they're actively transported and you have two different copies of the gene, one is more efficient than the other, then you have more transport efficiency up into the scion. So we're looking at possibly all of these, but and we've done now several experiments in the past 5 years, and we planted a new one last year. We're looking at growing a population of rootstocks in the same growth media. We have different rootstocks. In fact, this is we're talking about a structure population across and the progeny of this cross. And then we grafted the same scion on top, which in this particular experiment is Gela. This is the actual orchard, a picture of Google Earth. The population is about 180 individuals. We have maps for this, and this is not the topic of mapping is not the topic of this talk. We harvested 5 immature fruit collected only the fruit flesh in certain locations of the fruit, so that we would have a very similar type of fruit tissue that we harvested from, and then oven-dried samples. We sent them to a facility, and they measured with an ICP and all the other good instruments that they have: nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, calcium, and et cetera, in the fruit and in the leaves. We maintained, of course, the same tree, and then we had replicates of the same tree rootstock genotype. And this is a lot of data, but as you'll see in the next slide, it's the next data. It is a lot of data, and but what you can see is that this is. The distributions are all or mostly due to the genotypic variation in the broodstock abilities. So calcium is pretty important in apples, and you can see a variation of from 0.02 to 0.07%, and which is quite significant in terms of diseases, the post-harvest disorders that are associated with apple. Fruit-borne also in terms of parts per million, quite a bit of variation. Many of these concentration, nutrient concentrations, or rootstock-mediated nutrient concentrations are somewhat correlated, indicating that some of these nutrients are either being co-transported or they use the similar mechanisms, similar, let's say, molecular pathways to absorb and transport into the scion. So right up here, or right down here, this is fruit phosphorus. There is a very strong correlation between fruit phosphorus, fruit potassium, leaf potassium, and leaf phosphorus. But this is what was interesting. This is fruit boron right here, and leaf magnesium, which are seem to be fairly strongly negatively correlated potassium and phosphorus deal. Boron is important for fruit set and all kinds of other things. So And this has implications in terms of breeding or in breeding rootstocks. Because, well, okay, you can apply boron to the orchard, but if you don't have that luxury, then that's problematic. So we can take all of this data, this mega amounts of data, and kind of group the rootstocks based on their nutrient concentrations. And I just picked six of them. And this included fruit sulfur, fruit nitrogen, magnesium, and phosphorus and calcium. We can see right here, this is the column of the calcium, that there are groups where we do observe high fruit phosphorus, high fruit potassium, and high fruit calcium. But there are situations where, so perhaps there is a possibility that we can uncouple the negative correlation that we might see and select things that are that have high high fruit phosphorus or can impart phosphorus, potassium, and calcium altogether. So we can do this type of analysis using our data. And oh, right. So if we pick this group right here, and look at it in terms of the scatter plot relationships between fruit potassium, phosphorus, potassium, magnesium, and the leaf phosphorus, potassium, magnesium. This is the whole data set, by the way, and I didn't. So it's taking a snapshot, but those individuals appear right here. And what is interesting is this relationship right here between leaf magnesium and leaf phosphorus, where there seem to be, I don't know how to explain it, there seem to be a asymptotic relationship between the two, and perhaps it might indicate the crossover of two pathways, or the in some individuals the competing of the two pathways. So we're still working on that, but what does it mean for breeding apple rootstocks? And so let's say that we select, so we have this is going back to the dwarfing genes. Let's say that we have selected now things that are the same as far as the dwarfing capability. So the dwarfing genes are the same. This is a certain class of dwarfing rootstocks. If we select material that is very high for phosphorus or phosphorus uptake, what happens to the rest of the nutrients? And so not much with fruit potassium, you know, that's not, but look at what happens to the fruit calcium in this case. And so to hedge our bets, I guess we want to be in right here and be able to select these individuals in the middle, or be able to go up there to increase the calcium.
What value of calcium do you start getting there?
It depends on the apple. 0.3, but it depends on the cyan variety.
Okay, quite right.
Yeah, on the lower end. Yeah. And then it's not just calcium, but it's a calcium, potassium, and nitrogen balance that is in danger. So if you have if you can have low calcium, but if you have low potassium, you're okay with bitter pit. So it's one of those complex things. But so what happens in a different dwarfing class? This is only that has only dwarfing one, the genotypes that have or dwarfing one. What happens when we select on fruit phosphorus, and again, not much change, not much in fruit potassium. But look at what happens again to fruit calcium. But there's a little blip here, and this is perhaps one of those rootstocks that has the that uncoupled system. But again, look at what happens to fruit borer. So, and we can expand this. So we're taking a lot of data. We're taking data on as you can see the fruit size of these apples. We're taking data on the penetrometer, the pressure and bricks, and we can. Well, let's see. Fruit size. You can see that these nutrients are not quite associated with fruit size. Maybe it's a lot more complicated thing. Bricks, relationships with bricks, fruit pressure, and trunk diameter. This is a well-known relationship, but the new relationship that we found was with tree diameter and the nitrogen. You have less nitrogen concentration as the trees are bigger because of the dwarfing genes, and fruit sulfur and nitrogen, I guess, are part of the protein structure, and I think it reflects that. That's why they do that. But this is the cyan that we harvested from that. Population, and as you can see, there's quite a bit of an effect on the same gala fruit. This is Brookfield gala. This is all rootstock effect, and some of it may be just due to perhaps maturity, but a lot of what the rootstocks do is nutrient uptake and water relations and everything. So. Breeding for certain types may be important for coloring certain fruits, and of course the complexity of having pH and other variable soil types makes it more complex. So future work, we're doing this with Honeycrisp, so that we did this with Gala, and we're going to repeat this with Honeycrisp and other, and we're going to be using different populations in germplasm. And I think we can come up with one or two or three rootstocks that are basically very well adapted for a certain cyan to make it happy, nutritionally happy. And perhaps, find out different nutrient genes. This is my crew this year. It's the largest crew I've had, and thank you.
What do you mean? What's the relationship?
Are they, because I think these are two different loci.
They're two different loci, that's correct.
So are they additive if you combine
I guess they're epistatic. The best way to describe it. They're somewhat additive, but there is an interaction.
At this stage, could you say that an easily simple and straightforward to tie boost off to cyan, or what would be?
Is it simple to match rootstock to cyan? Somewhat, it's a lot simpler than 10 years ago. Yes, but it's still pretty difficult because the cyan itself has its own nutrient abilities, growth characteristics, and perhaps. What needs to be done is we need to have we need to classify cyans like we have done with rootstocks in terms of dwarfing nutriability and architecture to find out general types, and those general types of course are probably associated with genetic components to it.
The forest is a very important ingredient for the pollination for food systems. So I realize that you find the barium content in your fruit, in your leaves, are very high. And that means at the same time, the barium in your flowers is also high. Or have you tested about
it? I haven't tested the flowers yet, but I suppose because of the leaves and fruit, there is variation in the flowers. The correlation between fruit and flower, fruit and leaves for boron was not it was there. It was significant, but it was not strong. So,
okay.
Thank you.